off her time. She's very busy over there.
I'm sure.
Just to clue you up.
This is an interview conducted for the Brooklyn Historical Society Chinatown History Museum Oral History Project on Sunset Park, Brooklyn. The interviewer is Gregory Ruff. The interviewee is June Floodsend. The interview is being conducted on May 9th, 1994, at the 59th Street Lutheran Church between 7th and 8th Avenues. Okay. I'd like to start, June, if I could, by asking you to just introduce yourself.
Okay, my name is June Floodsend, as you heard, and I live here presently at the church. Been in this neighborhood since 1958.
When you moved here, how, if I can ask, how old were you at the time?
16.
16. With your whole family?
Yes.
Moved here? Mm-hmm. How large was your family?
We were six children. We are six children.
Do all of you still live in New York?
Just one other.
Just one other, mm-hmm. Yeah. And before coming here, you lived where?
I was in Brooklyn, but we lived 5 years and 5 days up in Nyack, New York.
Oh.
But we were in Brooklyn, and I was born in New York City.
Mm-hmm. Are you the oldest of
four? Yes.
And your parents come from where?
Norway.
From Norway. Were mm-hmm. they immigrants themselves?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Grandparents as well.
Grandparents and parents.
Mm-hmm. First generation Americans.
Did they ever tell you children stories about how they came to the United States, or what it was like when they first arrived? When they arrived?
Not all that much, except I found out why my father and his brother were so young to leave Norway, 14 to 16 years of age. And I found out it was a choice of either staying there to farm or going out to sea, and then you were away from your home quite a bit, or come to this country and make a new life. And that's basically what they did, mm-hmm. on their own.
On their own.
Mm-hmm.
How did they get passage? Their family help pay for the ticket, or do you know?
That I don't know, but I'm sure they either worked themselves over, or they had whatever funds they could get. At that time it was so cheap, it wouldn't be like today. Mm-hmm. And going by boat, of course.
And going by boat.
Mm-hmm.
Did they leave a large family behind?
Oh yeah, you're talking 7, 8 brothers and sisters.
Oh.
Older and younger than them.
And the family had a farm,
yeah.
in Norway.
Mm-hmm.
Whereabouts in Norway?
My family's from Haugesund,
Harrison.
Rural Ireland of Carmoy.
Ah. And they came here and established themselves where?
My father went out west, and then he came to New York. His brother came later on, working on the boats, tugboats, dredging, and my father eventually went to seminary, which is part of our church, Lutheran Synod. But then he worked for Bethlehem Steel, and then he went into working for the Bethesda Mission, which is was a mission for homeless men down on Woodhull Street in Red Hook section.
Was he a minister?
No, he started to, but he didn't finish.
He didn't finish.
Too many kids came.
That will put a dent in anybody's plan.
And then he worked, as I said, in Bethlehem Steel, and then he got a job working on the Tappan Zee Bridge, and that's how we got to Nyack.
Building the Tappan Zee?
On construction.
And by that time, he was already married?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
How did your parents meet?
I think it was through church.
Through church?
Yeah.
Was church a big part of everyone's life?
Oh, yes, very much. They were the ones that really helped many of the immigrants over here. This church was not in this location. They were in New York City at 168th Street. And my grandparents, they had an established restaurant business on 5th Avenue and 54th or 6th Street, on a promenade restaurant at that time. And then they became superintendents of a building in New York City, which is where I was born and raised for many years.
Now, you'd say your grandparents, before you were talking about your father and his mm-hmm. brother coming, were mm-hmm. your grandparents here before they came? Or did the two brothers, your father and your uncle, did they sort of lead the family's wave of immigration?
My father came over in the early 1920s, and I would imagine that my grandparents might have been here by that time, mm. because of course they are older.
Was there a network of Norwegian immigrants that they could tie into to try to find places to live or jobs?
Well, all over Bay Ridge, that's basically what you had. A lot of them started out in New York City with the church up there. Then they moved downtown Brooklyn. There was a huge population down there, and then they floated up towards Bay Ridge and Sunset Park area. And there you had a majority of Scandinavians. And by coming to an area where you're familiar with your language, your culture, your foods, that's where you hung out.
Yeah. Do your grandparents, or did your grandparents live in this area?
No, my grandmother died in 1945, so that was in New York City when we were still living there. And then my grandfather, up in age, he became a night watchman in one of the buildings in New York, but lived in Brooklyn.
But lived in
on
Brooklyn.
53rd Street.
Did your mother work at home, or did she work outside?
She basically was home until later on when we were in our mid-teens. Then she was working on the outside. Oh, I had to correct myself. When I was young, below 10 years old, she did work in New York City in the news building in New York City. But I don't know for how long, because then she was home for a while, and when we were living in Nyack, she was working again.
Do you know, or do you think that it was typical at that time for many working families to have both spouses working?
I think it depended on your home life and your needs. In construction, you didn't work all the time, so you needed extra income.
Find some sort of gap to fill in.
Yeah.
To fill in when there was.
And we have six kids.
Now you were the oldest.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And following after you were how many brothers? How many sisters?
I have four sisters and a brother.
And what have they all done with their lives?
Married the United Nations. I'm the only one that married a Norwegian.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Really?
All the others have married either Polish Americans or Swedish Canadian mixture, German, Irish Italian mixture, and Italian.
How did most of them meet their spouses? School, church, work?
I met mine in Brooklyn. I used to come to Brooklyn a lot from Nyack on the weekends with my friends. And we had a wonderful ice cream parlor around the corner. And so you had the clique from the church hang around the ice cream parlor. That's where I would meet my friends, and my husband and his friends, who were older than me, met them through the crowd. And from there, started dating. And with my sisters, they met theirs through other channels. They had another ice cream parlor, which was an Irish crowd. So my sister hung around a lot with the Irish guy, but through her friends, she met her husband, and then the others just met it in the neighborhood when we moved to Brooklyn.
Now, what did one have at an ice cream parlor those days?
The best place to hang out.
Yeah.
I really feel that if your kids are going to be out on the street, it's nice to know that if you wanted to reach your children, you can call them up and tell them, get home, or you knew where they were hanging around. They went out at 7, and they were generally leaving at 9 or 9:30 on a weeknight. But there, you didn't need much money to sit around and have a Coke all day and sit with your friends. So it was a meeting place.
Tables, booths?
Oh, yeah. As a matter of fact, I became a soda jerk myself on another ice cream parlor around the corner here at Mayer's.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Did you like that job?
Oh, loved it. Sure I did.
Did you eat lots of ice cream?
No, just ate nice lunches.
I had a teacher in elementary school who told a story about getting a part-time job at an ice cream parlor.
Oh, yeah, it was great.
The owner said to him, eat as much as you want, and he couldn't believe it at first.
So it's true.
He didn't the first day, and he started the second day. He said by the third or fourth day, he was so sick of ice cream that he never ate it again.
Oh, no, ice cream, I would have a milkshake for lunch and stuff of that nature, but I never freaked out on making all this globs of stuff. My husband at that time was the biggest tipper, so not bad. For 10 cents a cup of coffee. So those were the ice cream days.
Those were the ice cream days. Mm-hmm. It was a big feature of social life for you.
And Friday night or Saturday night was date night, usually.
What would people do on a date?
Basically, when I came to Brooklyn, upstate they only had one feature for the evening. I didn't know that when you came to a theater, if you missed part of it, you could stay and catch up with it. That was something new for me.
Oh.
But basically, you were either going to the movies, drive-ins out in Valley Stream. There were those of us that, instead of having the ice cream parlor, we took a ride out to Mitchell's Drive-In, which is a food place now occupied by Nathan's on 86th Street and 7th Avenue. That was another big thing. Went out to Nathan's. Not Nathan's, but Mitchell's Drive-In.
Wow. And it was food as well as a movie, or was it just wasn't a movie drive-in? When I hear drive-in from being from upstate New York.
Well, it was a food drive-in as well. At Mitchell's, it was a food drive-in, but if you want to go to a movie drive-in, I went a couple of times and was out in Valley Stream. Yeah.
I don't think much of movie drive-ins in New York.
Oh, yeah, that was then. And then there were people who just went down to Shore Road.
I have heard a lot about Shore Road.
You better believe it.
48 hours.
You haven't hit Shore Road, you haven't been in love. That was a smoochy place.
Yeah?
Oh, yeah.
I hear lots of the road with the hills or the trees on the side, very quiet and secluded. And
it really is very nice. Yeah, it really is. As a matter of fact, I even now, if before I was working here, I would just take the bus down to Shore Road and sit and enjoy the afternoon down there.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Some people told me they felt quite badly when the Bell Parkway was put in or the Verrazano Bridge was built. They felt it really
Area. Yeah, they disrupted a lot of people's homes, and that was a setback. But at the same time, many times we also, when you talk about Staten Island, we would take the ferry over Staten Island, and often there was a long, long, long line on the weekends to get over there. That was the drawback of the ferry ride. Mm-hmm. You had to line up early to get across, to get out early.
It would run from the Brooklyn side?
Yes. Over to where they have the ferry now for New York City from Staten Island.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes I miss that because even with girls, we would hang around and go out on the ferry boat ride back and forth. And it was a nice evening. Going no place fast.
Yeah, that's a nice way to
But it was a treat. And I feel a lot of kids miss out on that enjoyment because now there's nothing for them to do. Go to the movies, you're paying top dollar for movie and whatever else you buy there. So it gets to be hard on families who don't have enough money to send their kids to the movies.
Yeah.
That's why you have this video, stuck at home. So you miss out on a lot of friendships. Yes, you have your school friends, and I still have friends from grammar school and from when I was in high school at Fort Hamilton, keeping in touch with them.
What was the area like in 1958 when you moved here? Could you describe it? Did you think about the area as a particular community or a neighborhood?
No, because I was used to this area when I had all my friends from church, or from when I moved to Brooklyn, I had my high school friends. Basically, those people from church went to the same high school, and you met more friends at school. But it didn't faze me, it didn't bother me, because I was familiar with this area and I was down here enough. Mm-hmm. We came down on Sundays for church and Sunday school.
Even when you lived upstate?
Yeah, my father drove us down.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
So every Sunday, at least every Sunday,
oh, yeah.
At least once a week.
Mm-hmm.
And afterwards you would get together with friends, or was it a family outing altogether?
Yeah, basically, well, it depended. No, not often. Right after church we went home
mm-hmm.
and had dinner. Sometimes my mother was with us and sometimes not. If I wanted to hang around for the night crowd or church, whatever, then I would take a bus and subway. It would be 2 hours traveling. But you also had an aunt and uncle and cousin here, as well as my grandfather, so it was always something to do or something to visit. And if I wanted to come down in the middle of the week, or on a Friday night, I would take the subway down and the bus, sleep over at my grandfather's, and go home with my father, or just go home by myself.
Oh.
Yeah. Those days, you didn't mind sending your kid on the train and subway at the age of 13 or 14.
No, it's a...
I still go by myself, but that's besides the point. When I don't have to listen to my husband. No, see, it doesn't bother me to travel. I still enjoy it.
Now, when you came in 58, your parents bought the house here?
No, we just rented.
We've always rented. You rented. Mm-hmm. What were rents like at that time?
I really couldn't say. I really wouldn't know it.
What was the house or the apartment like that you lived in?
Well, when we first came, there was a house across the street. But then we lived in various places in Bensonhurst and Bay Ridge. We always had 2-3 bedrooms because we were so many kids. And we all stayed home until we got married.
Mm-hmm. Was it a very strong family life around the house, or did the children spend most of their time outside with friends?
We had a lot of responsibility. We had our things that we had to do at home, but we also had time for our friends.
Such as, how would you divvy up chores at home?
Depends on how well we fought. There were those who had to do the sweeping, those that were responsible for dishes, for vacuuming. We always maintained the property where we lived at. We call one of my sisters the broom girl. That was her responsibility, regardless of what age. There were laundry to do, ironing to do, things of that nature.
And brothers and sisters would split up jobs equally?
No, usually the oldest got the brunt of it.
Yeah, so
and then,
you shouldered more than your
family. Yeah, and then others had other responsibilities.
Would your parents assign you jobs, or did you sort of work it out with among yourselves?
No, parents told you.
Your parents.
And you did. Mm-hmm. You can argue, but you did.
Didn't get you very far.
No.
Did you or your brothers and sisters work when you were younger?
I did.
You did. Doing what?
Up in Nyack, I was working as a soda jerk. At 14, you were allowed to work there. And then I got that job here in Brooklyn. And I worked there for a while. And then I eventually worked for H&L Green up on Fifth Avenue. They closed up.
They were what?
A five and dime type store.
Okay.
Then I went down to McCrory's, which is on Fulton Street. So I worked there 6 days a week. Evenings and Saturday.
6 days a week. Mm-hmm. Wow. Mm-hmm. At that time, it was just you and your parents who were working, or were mm-hmm. you?
Well, on and off with my mother, but yeah, I was working to help fray school expenses and stuff of that nature.
Mm. Were public schools free at that time, or you had to pay?
Well, what do you mean by paying?
Well, I guess you, not being homeowners, you didn't have property taxes. But what would you say to help defer school?
Well,
costs?
For school supplies. You had to buy your school ring, graduation, things of that nature.
Did your brothers and sisters ever work before they finished high school?
Oh, my brother was a great shoe shiner. He did that when he lived in Bensonhurst. My other sisters, I can't remember. Arlene quit school, worked at the bank, but she eventually got her GED, later on in life.
She found it was an important thing to have?
No, she just wanted to have it behind a belt. Mm. This was just maybe several years ago that she got it. Both my sisters got it. And my brother dropped out of school, but he got his in the Army.
Oh. Was that quite frequent at that time for people to drop out of high school without finishing? Quite common, do you think?
No, I think some... No, not always. No. It was just that our home situation... so that we had to go and make money for ourselves, so we didn't have to depend on our parents to mm-hmm. supply us for clothes and so forth, mm-hmm. and things of that nature.
Did your parents, or even you yourself, did you make many things at home? Did you? Did your mother make your own clothes or anything like that?
Nothing
of that nature. With your father and mother, your father worked a lot outside, but sometimes irregularly, contracting work.
Right, construction.
Was the family tight-knit at that time?
I think it probably was, and we weren't aware of it. Mm-hmm. I see now between all of us, and people see that amongst us six, that we are very, very close-knit, in the sense that we stick with each other like glue, and yet if we have something to say to each other, we have that freedom to say so.
And you say it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's probably contributes to why you stick together like glue, because you're here. Your differences out.
Right, and that's the best part. We can talk amongst each other what's bothering us, and when it gets to a certain point where something has to be said, then we say it to that individual.
Were your parents like that with each other?
I presume so. And a lot of Scandinavians, they have a tendency to keep anything that's private in your home. Mm-hmm. They didn't sit and talk outwardly. They wouldn't think of sitting in a group of some sort, for example, in a Bible study, and say, gosh, my child got into trouble in school. That was kind of hush-hush. A lot of those things were. But now I see that they are much more open because they are learning that their children and their grandchildren are in a different mode of life than they were. And so as grandparents and mothers, they're facing crises that they never did when they were children. I remember when I was up in junior high school and high school in Nyack, if a child got pregnant, if a girl got pregnant, wow, that was, woo, big time. Now it's so nonchalant that you don't think the way you did then. Back then, it was a no-no. And in our eyes, it still is. But I mean, it wasn't discussed openly as you do here. And the shame wasn't as heavily as it was then. Mm-hmm. Things of that sort.
You talk about when people meet, for example, for Bible study, and you were just speaking a moment ago about how young people would gather at ice cream parlors or mm-hmm. soda parlors. What about adults? Where would they meet? Where would they socialize?
Basically in church.
In church.
Mm-hmm. For those that are from here, I mean, I'm talking about people unfamiliar with this church.
Mm-hmm.
Then you had the Sons of Norway groups on 8th Avenue, right next to Hanson's, between 59 and 60. There was a great Sons of Norway hall. It's now...
It's the mosque now.
A mosque, yeah. There, you had a lot of people coming to socialize on a Friday or Saturday night dances. Also on 8th Avenue, it was nothing but bars on every corner. So a lot of the Scandinavians who couldn't get alcohol so freely, they got smashed here on 8th Avenue because it was so free, it was so cheap. You still pay top dollar in that country today, and you don't have a bar. You either get in a restaurant or you go to a liquor store, which is almost like a library, so quiet, but it's not so close by. You have to travel a distance to get it. So here, all the sailors that came over on the boats, working on the boats, Brooklyn was one of the highlights that they stopped in because there was a Norwegian seaman's church downtown, which offered them a place, I don't know if necessary to stay, but a place to visit, get their Norwegian papers. They kind of socialized a little bit at the Norwegian church because they had activities for them. And then they would drift up to 8th Avenue with their friends, go to the bars and go to the Sons of Norway, get drunk, carry on like a bunch of nut jobs. But that was their fun. So you had that. And then we still have the Sons of Norway societies, different groups all over Brooklyn, Staten Island, Long Island, Connecticut. They're all over the United States. That's a nice organization where Norwegians still can enjoy their culture, their food, and be together with their own nationality.
What about women, for example? You've just talked about men or the sailors, men who would hit the bars on 8th Avenue thing. Did women have social networks or social forms in which they could gather and socialize outside the home? Or their contacts with each other more informal?
I think a lot of them, you did a lot of house visiting.
House visiting?
Yeah. And to this day, I still do that. I still believe in visiting friends and family. Yes, you had women going to the Sons of Norway dances. Some of them were in the bars, not that many. It's mostly guys, but you've seen them there. But a lot of the women, they just hung out at each other's homes and so forth, which I really feel is a great spot to socialize.
Where would it be? Living room? Kitchen? A porch? A yard? Was there a particular...
Basically, it was in the living room, but by the time you set the table with coffee and goodies, you ended up gabbing around the table, and that's where you pretty much ended up for the evening. Sometimes the guys would just drift in the living room and gab among themselves afterwards. But, yeah, it depends on your locale.
The table being usually in the kitchen or in a dining room?
Both.
Both.
Yeah. Many times we had dining rooms, but if you didn't, you had a big kitchen.
Nice big idiom kitchen.
Yeah.
That's what my wife misses most of all.
No, I don't blame her for that.
Yeah, me too.
Well, I'm from upstate myself. I mean, I have a home up there right now, but it's in Saratoga Springs, above Saratoga Springs,
oh, yeah.
So I'm way up.
Yeah. Well, I grew up in Binghamton, so...
West.
Yeah, westward from there. can you tell me something about... Church seems to have been very important for Norwegians, mm-hmm. Who lived in the area. What were some of the church activities that would be? What would a day of services be like on a Sunday?
It depends, because in this church we had many organizations. A lot of them have dwindled down or have been eliminated because they had so many people in each of the organizations. One is in existence today is the Martha Mary Society, and they basically support missions. There was a society called Yelpsum, which was a group of women, and you're talking groups of 60 people or more, 60 women or more, where they would provide care or visits to those that were sick at home, visit those that were in the hospital, going to other institutions where people are hospitalized. And the Yelpsum Society, I think twice a year, they provided fruit and other goodies, soaps or things of that nature that they would bring to these individuals who were hospital-bound or in an institution. I know they even made a visit out to Pilgrim State Hospital. Some of them would even sing Christian music, of course, for the group. So that society has dwindled out. And then there was another Norwegian group, and because either the people moved into the home or went back to Norway or literally just died off, that was Sulglem. They just finished off last year in this church because they were so few and they were so elderly, they just don't have the capacity to do the services that they once did. And so now we just have Martha Mary, which is a handful of people, maybe a dozen or more, dozen and a half. We have several years now, 10 or more years, had senior lunch once a month. And there were three groups taking turns. Now we're down to two. The English group provide dinners, and Martha Mary, they have sandwiches and jello and cake and so forth. So you have these huge organizations. And then there's still one, excuse me, that started many, many years ago, almost the beginnings of this church, I would say, called Fredensbund Society. And they're still in existence today. And they are basically all Norwegians with Norwegian programming. They are one of our biggest supporters or raisers for our mission field, our mission workers. So they provide programs twice a month on Saturdays, every other Saturday. They had big meetings up in Tuscarora, Pennsylvania on Labor Day weekend. They are still in existence, and they basically were the starters of 15 Astor Church.
Now, what kind of programs would they run?
When I say a program, they're meetings.
They're meetings.
Which is just your singing and preaching, and you had guest singers and guest speakers and so forth.
Were there lines of division along language in the community? Those who could speak English and those who could not?
In this church, we always had two services going at the same time. Mm-hmm. They had an English department and a Norwegian department, and we had Norwegian ministers. And you also at that time had people coming from Norway, where today you don't.
We're talking about the 60s or the 70s?
People come from Norway from the early 20s.
But I mean when these programs were running full steam.
The highlight were in the 50s. I mean, when I look in my record books here, the amount of Norwegians in this neighborhood was phenomenal. And you didn't only have this church, you had a few Norwegian churches, 52nd Street, 66th Street, 46th Street Church. They were all Norwegian Americans. So you had, from your locale, wherever you were living, you went to that church, basically.
Mm-hmm. Did congregations divvy themselves up in terms of place of origin in Norway, for example?
No. It was Norwegian, yeah. And then they would always have special services during the year, whether it be for Easter, Christmas, and whatever other. We always also had concerts there. We had, and still do once in a while, if we get them from Norway when they are up in Pennsylvania, Fredensbund has usually some Norwegians come over. And so if they can stay another week, then we have them as guest speakers or singers here in the church, or musical programs and so forth.
Now, outside of the church-sponsored activities, were there other secularly-sponsored celebrations or festivals throughout the year that gave people a sense of belonging or community or identity as Norwegians or as something else?
I really can't think of any. You would have to check someone who would be more familiar with that than me.
There's the parade, right?
Yes, definitely. But you see, many times there were other festivities in other churches, and so all of them would join in under the one roof.
But many of the festivities were organized through churches?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So church was a major part of people's
lives? Oh, very much.
Were the congregations at all mixed, non-Norwegians?
There were a few. At that time, you would say just a few, because there were Norwegians that married Italians or Irish people.
Mm.
But I know all the men that married into our family, they were Catholics and they're now Protestants. Not that all of them are as strict as some of us were or want them to be, but yeah, they converted.
They
attend the Protestant churches, and they even work in other words, volunteer doing things in their own churches.
What about the women in your family who married non-Norwegians? Have they converted, or did their husbands convert?
It's all their husbands.
Always the husbands?
Yeah, and never under pressure, because a lot of my sisters never went to church, as far as being active in church, I should say. But when they eventually left their Catholic church, and when they saw the activities here and learned more of what the Christian faith is, they realized that they didn't particularly care of what they saw in the Catholic Church. And so they got active in the Lutheran churches or whatever church they became a part of.
It was, to them, do you think it was too close? When you say you think they don't care for what they saw, what do you think?
Well, too many rituals.
Too many rituals.
It was the rituals that they, as a matter of fact, one of the guys was an altar boy. And yes, it's very important for them at that time. This is what they knew and this is what they grew up with. Becoming a little bit active in our church and so seeing the activities we had and hearing the preaching that they heard, well, then that took on a new light. And now one of the Irish Catholic boys, that was an older boy, he is very much into his faith more than my own sister.
Yeah.
And he is now a member of this church or his congregation out in Long Island, which is a sister church of this.
The children from the mixed marriages, were they very active in the church in terms of Bible study?
No, not enough. Because if the mother didn't participate, it depends on which sister you were talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them were and others aren't. And I feel that they lost out a lot because they don't know anything.
Mm-hmm.
They don't know from a Catholic to a Protestant to a Jew. So, yes, they attend church once in a while, but that doesn't make it.
Yeah.
It really doesn't cut it.
Do you send your own children to
them? I don't have any.
You don't have any children?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. In terms of the neighborhood, the residents in the neighborhood, was it all Norwegians at the time you moved here, or was it...
Basically,
predominantly.
You had Irish. As a matter of fact, you go up the next block, and it's full of Irish people.
On 6th Ave?
Between 6th and 7th. In 7th and 8th, definitely. That's all Irish up there.
Mm.
And you still have an abundance of Irish people, but not as many. I lived on 58th Street between 11th and 12th. And there were maybe four Norwegians when I came there, and we ended up being the last to leave.
Hmm.
We had a majority at that time of Italians on that block. Now it's the upper half is Italian and the lower half is the Jewish people. You have the regular Jewish people and then you have the Hasidic on that block. And now I call it Brick City because they have literally taking down these very lovely old-fashioned porch homes, buying a property, rip them all down two at a time, and it's all brick homes. And so the enjoyment that I had looking out my backyard, which was a country-type setting with a ranch home and these old-fashioned houses, they took that view away just before I left there. They were building up more and more brick homes.
Why the brick homes?
Because it's more money, you get more rent, the Jews had the money for that. They also don't, their importance is space. You can build bigger homes by not having a backyard and a front yard. So you could get maybe 8 or 9 rooms, and if you get to 2 or 3 levels, you have income, which is what you want to have to pay for these homes. There are other Jewish people that bought the existing homes and they've created beautiful yards. And the neighbors that I met, those that were on my block as Jewish people, we were very, very friendly with, and got along with them greatly.
Were yards and gardening a big part of your life when you were younger?
Only because I lived for over 30 years in one place, and we did that for our landlord after his wife died.
Uh-huh.
We did that as a courtesy. He was almost like father to us, or he was up our house all the time.
He was Norwegian too?
Swedish.
He was Swedish.
Mm-hmm. So we took care of the yard and the shoveling and all kinds of painting and did that ourselves.
For other families in the area, I see many houses with now small yards. I presume that in the past they may have been bigger.
Well, in our neighborhood it was all standard size. You get some of these homes that are one family homes and you did have bigger property. But those that are attached, you only get so much in the front and in the back. My landlord did say where we lived was strictly all farmland around here.
It had been?
All farmland. Much, much. I would love to have seen pictures of that.
Me too.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's quite interesting. What do children usually cover in Bible study classes?
It depends on the age group.
Hmm. How early do they start?
With the teenagers, when we have a group, they start around 13 or 14. And that's Peg Swigert's division. She handles the youth group. And many times she will discuss a certain subject, or she'll go perhaps into the Bible and view a certain chapter, ask them, what does that mean to them? Try and get their input, what does it mean today? Because it's relevant just as it is then, as it is today. And with the things that the kids are dealing with today, it helps them bring a little bit more light to their life of why it's important to be grounded in the Bible, why you can go there for your source of strength, for encouragement. You'll read about other men and women who have had just as much tragedy, if not more than you, and how they overcame that. And the bottom line is, you have your faith, and your faith will bring you through no matter what you go through, because it'll tell everyone that no matter what happens in life, you're going to face problems. You're not going to go through life scot-free. It's going to be there. It tells you it's going to be there. So it kind of sets them up and kind of ground them. Whether they retain it now, it may come back to them later on, which happens quite often. I was going to say they want to feel or sow their oats or whatever for a while, especially when you go off to college. You go into a different atmosphere from what my nieces tell me. You have a whole new life. You get this complete freedom that you didn't have at home. And the only drawback that I hate to hear about college kids, but it seems to be quite frequent, is all the drinking that's done there. And I am very fearful of a lot of them that don't know how to handle it. I don't begrudge them having fun, but I've also seen a lot of alcoholics, and I know a lot of alcoholics. And it's a sad commentary in your life. It affects you, your family, your friends, everything. And it can destroy you. And kids don't understand that. And I feel it's going to hurt them. And I wish there was a little bit more control of their drinking on campus, because they just had these... They studied, don't get me wrong. They really, my nieces did well. But when I hear of all the things that go on in college, I kind of feel sorry for them, because it seems that there's no other way to have fun. Mm-hmm. And I don't mind having a glass of wine myself or anything of that nature, but I can very easily say, no, I do not want any, thank you. Why can't you be bothered? No, thank you, I don't want any. And it's not to make the other person feel guilty, but I can have just as much fun, and I can go into a fit of laughter, and then if I were drinking, they would say, ah, she had one too many. Well, they can't say that to me, that's because this is it, you know.
Was there a problem with alcohol earlier in the community, in the past? You talked about the sailors or the men drinking.
I always think there's been a problem with alcohol. I don't think you ever will get away with it. It's just as to how you can handle it. Sometimes people will drink not realizing how much they are drinking. Well, that's excusable. But just for the sake of going out drinking, just to drink, I just have no use for it. That's me.
No.
Everyone has their own priorities.
I'm the same, but I remember what it was like when I was in high school, or even in college, and how people wasted years of their life.
Right.
Realizing only too late, you know. That
exactly.
It was sort of important that I was here, and I missed it.
Yeah.
The opportunity. Was education something that was highly valued?
I really don't know, because we just, at that time when I was going to school, someone on to college. I felt I wasn't college material, but the idea is I went to work, got a job, as well as my sisters. They all did the same thing in New York City, and we got along very well without an education.
Did your brother? Any of your brothers go to college?
None of us went to college.
No. So it's their children who are the first generation of college.
Exactly.
College goers. When you were young, were the customs and traditions that came out of your ethnic or national heritage important to your family or important to you? How would they be passed on? How would you learn about them usually?
Well, basically you remember what you had from home, you saw the festivities in the church, you still enjoy the foods that you're familiar with. Some of us are more Norwegian than others in our family. Some, I would have the Norwegian cookies, my sisters would go the American style cookies.
Mm.
But other than that, some of them just have a hint of Norwegian in them. Whereas I'm more Scandinavian than.
Did you all grow up speaking Norwegian?
No, I learned it on my own.
You learned it, and your brothers and sisters do they?
No.
They don't speak it.
No.
Was it difficult to learn? When did you decide to learn?
When I wanted to hear what my parents were saying, try to figure it out.
Well, as the oldest sibling,
you pick out a few key phrases, but my in-laws were Norwegians. You had Norwegian people here in this church. You picked up words, but when I went to Norway for the first time, I thought, boy, you better start learning, because here you have a four-year-old, that is your niece, and she can't understand English, whereas now the majority of them understand English.
Was it important to your parents that the children, that your children learn English?
No. Oh, English?
English.
Oh, they spoke English all the time at home. You know.
Did they make a point of having you all understand that you were Americans now, or it wasn't an issue to them, something like this?
I think they were Americans. I always felt I was American. Mm-hmm. I mean, there was no stress that you have to do it because this is how we do it in Norway or anything. It was nothing of that sort.
Did you feel you or other people in your family or in the Norwegian community faced any sort of discrimination because of...
No.
From other non-Norwegians in the...
No, never.
No? Things were very... Was there a lot of interaction? You talked about some Irish being nearby.
Well, there was always harmony between your neighbors because I don't know about other nationalities, but I know the Norwegians were known to be very clean and fussy people, and a lot of the women who did have outside jobs, they were housekeepers. And boy, they earned their keep. They worked extremely hard. Some of them were living... A lot of the young women that came over single, that's what they did, speaking no English, but they were able to get through an agency a job cleaning the house or whatever, cooking. And so they made out that way.
Not necessarily working for Norwegians.
No, not at all. My aunt came over here in her 50s and worked as a housekeeper, and she knew not a word of English.
Oh.
So she just dove right in.
How would people who came single...
Meet, I don't know about that, but I do know a lot of these brownstone homes, they had a lot of rooming houses within the buildings. They would rent out bedrooms versus apartments. So you could rent out 2 or 3 rooms. And I gather, just as you meet a friend, you start hanging out with them and then socializing wherever they would want to go. So, yes, you would share a bathroom with all these other people on the same floor.
You talked about visiting Norway. Have you visited many times?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I had my in-laws over there, and with my family there, my husband's family's there. Yeah, I still like to visit whenever I get the chance.
Do most people in there, do most Norwegians still retain close ties to Norway? Do they go back frequently? Or
if they can, yes.
Have a lot of contact? Telephone?
Yes, very much so. Sure. It's very cheap to call. If you stay up in the middle of the night to call,
yeah,
no problem. Yeah, and at the time, many people were going by boat, but years ago in the 60s, they had group charter rates. So some travel bureau would offer a great rate to go. So that's how we started, basically.
Big groups?
It varied. If there was a church group going, yeah, they could have close to 100 people going from the various churches, mm-hmm, if you can get on board.
And then you would split up and go on your own when you got to Norway?
Right. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Just meet one. Plane leaves, and that
That's
was it.
Nice.
Oh, it was great. It really is great. And I find a lot of changes over there within the family because they don't show their emotions over there, and many of them over here for that matter. And I was commented, you know, people over here don't hug like that. Well, that didn't stop me, and now I find a big, big difference over there. They'll come and give you a hug and a kiss and show their emotions, which they never did when I first went over.
What do you think changed that?
Me.
Really? Well, good for you.
Well, yeah, I think they loosened up. And even one of my nephew's wives said, I wish we would hug more over here like the Americans. Mm-hmm. And I think basically Americans were doing that probably without realizing it, thinking it was natural. And it was natural for us over here, within our family anyway. And so little by little, it broke down the ties.
You talk about Bible study... With children beginning in their early teens, earlier mid-teens, was there a Sunday school for early?
Definitely, yeah. You have pre-K or kindergarten, mm-hmm, your school age on up.
Bilingual?
No.
No.
Turning over tape.
In the course of Sunday school, what sort of things would be covered? Would children learn about Norway in Sunday school?
No.
Not at all.
You basically had your singing of songs, you had your Bible lesson or your Sunday school lesson. They would know of Norwegian festivities when there was a, what we call a fest, which is a Sunday school Christmas program. And at that, at my age, you had a piece to say. You had to recite something with your class, either individually as a group, or they sing. So they got a little bit of that. And we would go around the Christmas tree downstairs singing the Christmas carols as well as some of the Scandinavian songs.
And you would celebrate Norwegian Independence Day as well?
Which is coming up now.
Which is coming up. That's what the parade has always been focused on.
Mm-hmm.
All right. I want to, before we wrap up, I want to ask you about some of your reflections on the changes that you've seen in the community, particularly as it relates to since Chinese had begun to move in and settle.
Reflections.
Or reactions.
The idea, well, it's sad to see so many people move away from the neighborhood, number one, either out to Bay Ridge or surrounding communities in Long Island, New Jersey. Some by choice, others not a choice. And there's no problem with the change in the neighborhood, except that the neighborhood is busy 7 days a week, and we never had that. Sundays was always a quiet day where you could walk the street, see clear down to 52nd Street, and now it's like Times Square. And the parking is horrendous, double parking, truck parking. It makes it very difficult for us to have festivities here because we can't park. And you're dealing with elderly people who can't walk that far. And so they get dropped off, and then they have to go looking all over the neighborhood for a parking space. So I kind of dislike that aspect of Sunday being such a busy day. I realize that the Jewish people in our community, Saturday was a very quiet day, mm-hmm. more activities on Sunday. But I do like the one day of quietness where you can come here in the neighborhood and get a parking space. You can't anymore. It's 7 days a week. And I guess it's a lot like that no matter where you go. The malls are open 7 days as well. But at the same time, Chinese people also work 6 days a week, many of them, and so Sunday's their only day off to come shopping. So that's the only drawback. Too much busyness. I'm not crazy about that. I never will be, I don't think.
Yeah. Before we started the recording, you had mentioned to me sort of a going down or a depletion of stores or services.
Specialty
stores.
The delicatessens, I have to go out of my way to get good German deli salads and so forth. Scandinavian foods, yes, there's Olsen's Bakery, and I do go down to 69th Street or 5th Avenue, wherever. But it's not convenient just to walk. I'm used to walking around the corner for something like that. So I miss my foods. I go down to 11th Avenue to do a lot of my shopping for cold cuts. That's the nearest place that I enjoy going to. Italian, but that's okay. But that's the only drawback, because I'm not a big lover of Chinese food.
Yeah.
Simple as that.
Is there much interaction between the Norwegian community in the area and the Chinese immigrants?
No, because of the language.
Of the language. The congregation here is
We have a Chinese congregation. They do have their Chinese service. They have a youth group, which is a lot of English-speaking kids. There's no problem with that. But it's very difficult, even if I want to go around and find out what something costs. Everything is written in Chinese. Well, you're not telling me what that is. I have to ask. And so there's that barrier. They do speak English, but I'm sure it was like many years ago, you heard Scandinavians on the avenue speaking their language, and now you hear another dialect.
Yeah. The congregation that's here, are they affiliated with you, or do they rent space from you? Is it...
No, it's part of the Lutheran Brethren Church from our synod out in Minnesota. And they have different churches in different parts of the country. They have one out in Long Island, New Jersey, and so forth. So we're all over.
Is their pastor Chinese? Chinese?
Yes, speaking? We do have a Chinese pastor, Peter Ng. He's not in today, but tomorrow.
Okay. Some of the Chinese who we have interviewed have been talking a lot about concerns about security and safety and crime in the area.
Picking up the paper, especially the free local paper that they have in the neighborhoods, yeah, it's crime all over the place, and I'm saying I don't see it. I mean, including broad daylight, including my old neighborhood. But I haven't come across it yet. I am sure my day will come, as they tell me, but I have always walked around without any fear, and it hasn't bothered me yet.
Thank goodness. You live... Exactly where now? You live on 59th, 58th?
Now I live two doors away.
Two doors away, right here on 59th?
Yeah, but for over 30 years I lived on 58th, between 11th and 12th.
Between 11th and 12th.
My favorite neighborhood.
Yeah.
It really is.
It's the best now. The place you own now, you rent or own?
No, I rent from... I'm part of the church.
Okay, so you rent right from the church. The residents in the area, are the apartments or the houses here, are they being turned over, are they turning over to Chinese owners or Chinese tenants?
It depends. You have a mixture of Americans still living on this block. But I'll be honest with you, if you were going to sell, you're not going to find too many Americans coming here to live because of the shopping and the language. So naturally, your tendency is probably to sell to a Chinese because they're the ones that want to live here. Mm-hmm. You're not going to find Irish moving in too quickly, nor any other, maybe Polish. We have a few Polish here
moving
and there.
In now. Mm-hmm. Has that something that has started recently?
I think in the last several years, even in my old neighborhood, there's some Polish moving in.
Do you have any... I'm flipping around on topics now because I know that you want to... You
yeah,
need your
I do.
Own.
I really have to go.
Let me ask you one last question. Do you sense get a sense that there's particular needs that the Chinese community has in terms of social services that may be lacking for them?
I couldn't answer that.
You really don't know?
No, I really wouldn't know.
All right.
There are some places on 8th Avenue... services or banks or whatever, they may be able to help you on that. I couldn't answer that at all.
Do the children play together? Chinese children, Norwegian children, the ones
well, when they're here.
At the church?
Yeah, we have a nursery school downstairs and you have American and Chinese together and they get along famously.
They get along well.
What children don't?
Exactly.
You don't have your parents butting in.
The diplomats of the world.
Yes.
Our children.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
I appreciate it.
Okie dokie.